This is Rabbi Brian in post-production, Saturday, August 1st, 2020. Glad you're listening. ROTB.org for more information. Oh, hi, Rabbi Brian. Today is the first day of August 2020. This is the Saturday service, and there's lots of people who are here. And let me see if we can say hello to... I feel like Mr. Rogers here. Can all my friends say hello?
Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Wonderful. Good morning to all my friends who are here. This is being broadcast to Facebook Live as well as to YouTube. If you do not like your likeness to be seen, please disengage from this. A lot of people also just are listening in. I'm Rabbi Brian. I'm your host of the Saturday service. And every week, we have a little service, and I invite my friends, and we have a discussion. And today's discussion is going to be on the topic of hope. And some eagle-eyed people have already noticed that Rabbi is not in his normal place. So I'll show you. Here's where I am. Hi. There's me. Long shot. I set up a camera here. I am away. I got kicked out of my house. Not kicked out of my house. I was encouraged to leave for two nights because I had burned out. And so I am at an Airbnb about 2 miles from my home, where I've just completed a second night of sleeping by myself, and it has just been delightful and delicious and restorative. And I'm glad to be with you guys here in my Airbnb in delightful Elliott neighborhood of Portland, Oregon. Any major news that we should be going on in your lives of people who are out there? Things that you need to just blurt, get off your chest right away? Something you want to tell the group that you've been dying to jump in with?
All right. I'm on vacation for 10 days.
I saw that, Alex. You got 10 days of no work. Good for you. And of course, because of COVID, you got nothing fun to do with it.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, but we're glad for the positive side of it that you have some time off. Anyone else have good morning, Shirley? Oh, Shirley, I'm glad. Oh, look at that. Did I put a comment on the screen? I think I did. Did that show up on your guys' screen? There it is. Oh, I got a little message from Coral, who's just joining us via Facebook, and then also another one from Shirley. There it is. And speaking of Shirley, I wanted to do a little bit of review before we moved into today, because we had a discussion with Shirley about the muses. Is that last week? Can I get a head nod if you remember doing that with Shirley? Was that in this group or was that on the Tuesday group? Am I a little off?
It was this group.
It was this group where we talked with Shirley about how might you get in touch with the muses. Yeah. Betsy Ann shaking her head no.
Yes, we did.
We did have that discussion. Thank you, Nancy.
Saturday?
Well,
Last Saturday,
I challenged Shirley to get in touch with the muses unannounced. I said, Shirley, if you had your ability, how would you get in touch with the muses? And she made up a way. And if you recall, I mocked her. And I said, you're doing it completely wrong.
Yes, I remember that.
Right, and I told her, I said, Shirley, you're doing it wrong because you're not addressing the muses in Greek. And Shirley played along wonderfully, and she said, I don't care, that's how I'm going to address the muses. And I said, well, you're not going according to any of the rules of the people in Delphi. And she said, I don't care, I'm still going to I'm going to connect with the muses in the way that makes sense to me. And I was recounting this story to a friend, and I realized I don't think I did a really good check for understanding. I just assumed that everyone understood the moral to that story.
Yes.
So I wanted to just go back, because it fits in very well with an introduction to what religion outside the box is all about. And so can somebody, in their own words, because I know I would love to hear from someone else, what was the moral of the story? What was I really telling Betsy, what was I really telling Shirley when I told Shirley that she could not address the muses the way that she wanted? She had to use a fixed way of addressing
Betsy, me or someone?
It was Shirley. Shirley, Rita, do you have a comment on us for that?
Add at the bottom of the page.
Oh, are you getting distracted by the words at the bottom there, Ruth? I thought to have a cryon at the bottom of the screen for people who are turning in late. Is that awfully distracting? I can take that down.
You don't see it.
Thank you.
Leave to an either or, you can't say yes. I don't know which way you're going. You want me to take it down?
I know who you are.
It's no problem.
All right, I might take that down.
Yes, by Brian, I find it distracting.
Did it just go away?
Yes.
Okay, good for me.
You're getting good at this.
I'm doing this all on my laptop just to make it all the more impressive. So thank you. Thank you very much. There's me live using my laptop right now. So I want to go back to me chastising Shirley as to how to address the muses and how to get the muses involved in life. And I wanted to get back to the moral of that story before we really got into our service today.
I wasn't there last week, but my impression is that this sounds very much like you were taking on the role of what traditional religions try to say. Like, unless you follow our exact methodology of interacting with the spiritual world or whatever, you're not living your life appropriately, you're not being religious properly, and Shirley was pushing back very much with the ROTV approach of just engaging with it is good. I don't need to follow a prescriptive practice.
Yeah, beautiful, Lyndon. Thank you so much, and especially for an introvert, I really appreciate you scooching out there.
Thank you.
And if I hit it with the muses, I find nobody's really going to get their hackles up about the correct way to address the muses. And I think that's an easy way for us to get into this, that there's no correct way to pray. There's no correct way to meditate. There's no one way of doing any of this, that we all need to figure out our own path. Okay, great. Now, we're going to do a little bit of review before we get into our topic of the day. Quick review, because I think this is something I really want everyone to know, and we did this last week and the week before. We did the five elements of a spiritual life, that there are five elements of the spiritual life. And if you found yourself answering last week, if you give some other people a chance, but there are five elements. Somebody can remember one of them. What was one element of a spiritual life, according to Eric Fromm in our definition we're playing with? Yeah, that there's values, that there's a hierarchy of values, that to have a spiritual life does not mean you are without a sense of priorities, that love is definitely a higher value than hate. Wonderful. And let's hear from someone else. Go ahead, Carol, what do you have? Oh, I got more than one Carol, but I was looking at Carol Williams, who was doing this with her hands. Carol Williams, can you tell us what does this part of a spiritual life mean? I cannot put a box around the infinity symbol. That's just wrong.
Something infinite. Something.
Yeah, it's that we're connected to something larger than ourselves, that we have some connection. That's fantastic. We have two out of five of the spiritual life down. Can we go for number three?
Transformation.
Karen Roberts for the win. A spiritual life is about transforming. Not about transforming the world, but about being transformed and being changed. And show of hands, anybody who really enjoys doing that? Nobody. Okay. There's a great Hemingway quote that I often think about with this one, where Hemingway said, "I don't like writing, I like having written."
That's good.
I don't like transitioning.
I can relate to that so much for so many areas.
Yeah, good. Good. You and Hemingway and all of us. So we got one is about values, that a spiritual life means living a life of values. A spiritual life means living, knowing we're connected. A spiritual life means that we move, that we change. I got two other things that make up a spiritual life.
Service to others.
Service to others. That would be under this category of it's not about me and selfishness. Obviously, I have to take care of myself, and that's how I got exiled to a two nights away because I had not been taking care of myself. I had been doing too much of taking care of other people. But we need to know that it's not about ourselves and we need to take care of others. We have one, two, three, four aspects of a spiritual life. And the last one on the spiritual life, see if you can write it down before I do. Last, yeah, you got it?
Well, ask questions rather than give answers.
That's exactly right. And I like the way you asked it as a question as opposed to giving it directly as a statement. So that a spiritual life knows, and this has to do with the transformation aspect, that in a spiritual life, oh, is that crayon still back on the bottom of the screen? Sorry, yes. Guys.
I like it.
Okay, it's gone. A spiritual life is about curiosity. And can you get a curious stance? Not going, oh, that happened, blah, 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 blah. But I wonder why that happened. I wonder why I'm having the reaction that I'm having. A spiritual life is not about knowing things. Spiritual life is about questioning things. Oh, good job, gang. Very nice review. There's my outline. Just so you know. Yeah, okay. So here we are. Da, 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 da. Welcome to the Saturday service. I'm going to change screen. Can everyone, I'm going to see a large view and I'm going to try to see everyone on the screen at once. Can I see a show of hands of people who are here at this, the Saturday service, by free will? Show of hands if you are here under your own volition. I think that's every square. Is there any that I missed? I don't think so. I think everyone at least thinks that they're here by their own free will. Let's try a different one. Everyone who has the freedom of will to raise your hand, please raise your hand. It seems like the same people. Okay, well, you guys are all here, either by free will or not. And I think that's very important. That you feel at least that you chose to be here. Now, this might get a little bit trippy, but here, let me bring this all together. So, I got confused because I got exiled on Thursday. Thursday, I am biking here to this Airbnb, and I call my best friend Larry, and I have dried out. I am like a, you know those little... they're like little gelatin capsules and they have sponges inside them and you put them in water and then they expand out to be. And then I want you to imagine one of those sponges left out on a plate for about 4 or 5 days. That's how I had become. I had become just sucked out. I had become just, and they said, Brian, go away for 2 nights. And when Jane and the kids and my best friend Greg all said, Brian, you're burned out. You got to believe them. I was mad, and I actually got really mad at my friend Greg. I was like, you don't have the right to tell me what to do. I didn't say that, but I was rehearsing that in my head, and I was like, Brian, he's trying to take care of you. Shut up. So I bike down here to this Airbnb, and I call my best friend Larry, and some of you know my best friend Larry. He's an 83-year-old retired Disciples of Christ minister and sociology professor. And at the Tuesday group, we're going to talk more about it, getting him more involved here. That's Tuesday. So I call him and I say, Larry Keene, I need your help. I am burnt to a crisp and I need you to tell me what is the formula, what is the magic incantation, what is the way that I can get more hope in my life? Because I'm out of hope right now, Larry, and I need it. And he said, Brian, I could answer that question. And I'm very excited today to be able to explain to you what he taught me. And this should follow exactly on, this is a good lesson plan. But he said, Brian, before I tell you how to get hope, I have to ask you a different question. I said, okay. He said, Brian, and I'm going to break you guys into groups in a moment. Let me just get that set up so that I'm ready to do that at the moment's notice that I need to do it. He said, Brian, Larry does, Alex, can I ask you a tech help question?
Yes.
Do you have the ability to break people into groups?
I think it's a meeting setting, and it does not look like the meeting setting is enabled.
Oh, stinky poo. Okay. Well, that would explain. So you know how I said we're going to break into groups? We're going to break into one group.
Okay.
We're going to just do this group. Oh, hi, Allie, and everyone else who joined, and Nikki and other folks who are just here. So here's the question Larry asked me, and I was going to have you break into small groups to answer this question amongst yourselves, but that's not going to happen today. And Larry asked me this question. He said, Brian, when you are around a cynical person, how does that make you feel? And so let me ask you guys, I was going to have you do this as small groups and come up with a list of things, but when you interact with a cynical person, what does it make you feel like? And I'm just posting this one up from my friend Jen, who, thank you for being honest about being burnt out. You're welcome. I figure I have the easiest job in the world. All I have to do is model being human. And people are like, hey, good job, Brian. So
I was going to have you do small groups and come up with a list of things. But when you interact with a cynical person,
What's it do? Jen, you were on a roll there.
I swear.
When you interact with a cynical person, you swear. Give me some other easy, quick answers. One word, two words, three words.
Avoid them.
You get tired. You get tense. Give me some other ones.
Deflated.
Deflated.
Discouraged.
Discouraged.
Dejected.
Go ahead, Betsy.
I play the devil's advocate and show them ways to give them hope.
Yeah, so there's some kind of tension when you're dealing with someone who's cynical. You want to convince them otherwise. Derek, you have something to say? It sounds like there's extra line on your mute. And I see here Sarah Maria. Oh, hi, Sarah Maria.
I immediately become judgmental of that person.
Right, we become judgmental. We're around cynical people. Sarah Maria said they can be exhausting. Thank you. Thank you for adding that one. You can wind up feeling really drained. Cynical people will drain you. Now,
I laugh.
You laugh. You're ahead of me on this lesson plan. So
just don't engage.
Slow back. They suck the energy out of you. Absolutely.
Don't engage at all.
You don't engage. You don't want to be with those people, correct?
No.
Anyone have, like, is you have your choice. Now, let me give you a choice. You can go into room A where there's a group of, it's the Cynics Association meeting, or you can go into room B where it's first-time stand-up comics. And I will tell you, first-time stand-up comics, that's not pretty. It is. But I'm still going to give you your choice. You get first performance stand-up comics or the Cynics Association of North America. Where are you going to go?
Right? Comics every time.
Every time. And if I were to make it even, what does it feel like when you're around somebody who's hopeful? What does it feel like when you're around someone who's hopeful?
Energizing.
It's energizing.
It gives you life and hope. If you heard Obama's speech, it was like getting a transfusion of energy. You suddenly had a vision and you said, oh yeah, I almost forgot that vision.
Yeah. It's contagious. In the same way cynicism's contagious, but it's in a much better way. Derek, I got to mute you, buddy. Be careful when you're unmuting. There's a lot of sound coming off of your... Okay, so if you have the choice to be between the cynical person and the hopeful person, you would pick the hopeful person every time. Hold on. I'm going to take us on a quick detour because the camera thing was not working. So I'm going to pull this quote up and then we're going to come back, I promise. I want to look at a quote for a minute. Here it is. Is that it? Yeah. This is a quote that I just saw from Thomas Merton. Our job is to love without inquiring first whether or not it is deserved. Our job is to love without inquiring first whether or not it is deserved. What do you think of that?
I think it can be a tall order.
Nobody said, and this is easy.
Yeah, you know, because especially when you combine that with, you know, the feelings of, you know, being, you know, around somebody who's, cynical, or just general negativity and, you know, as a larger issue. It's very hard to be around people like that.
Yeah, it's very hard to love them.
These two things are in conflict.
Yeah, it's very hard to love cynical people. Well, it's not as easy to love cynical people. That's true. Our job is to love without inquiring first whether or not it is deserved.
I don't think love is ever deserved. Love is a gift. We don't start into an accounting about whether or not someone should be loved. It's a gift that we are able to love, and it doesn't necessarily go to all people, cynical or not. But it's absolutely not something you get by figuring out deserve or not deserve.
Right. And how about for self-love? I think of that, because the quote doesn't specify it's necessarily only for other people. How about for oneself?
And that's very hard, too.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing, right? But I like Carol's notion of it being a gift. There's this notion of grace, that it's undeserved. Yet you get it. It's kind of like you go to and someone says, have anything you want on me. You don't deserve whatever it is you're getting, but they want to give it to you. Okay.
But coming back to the cynical person, I can love the cynical person and still not want to spend time with them.
Right.
Bingo.
I have a friend who said to me, can I love my daughter if she becomes a Republican? And I said, absolutely. She's becoming herself, and you have to love her because you love her and not because she's taking on your values.
Right. So there's this idea in love that often we get learned into really young. Where's my little friend Elliot? Elliot is the youngest one to be dealing with this. Where's Elliot? There's Elliot. Hey, Elliot, can you say hi? There's Elliot. I don't know if you guys could all see him. But Elliot is learning, as we all learn, that love is also... Oh, hi, Elliot.
He's offering.
Okay. The yellow one?
That's some cinnamon roll.
Oh, thanks for the cinnamon roll, bud. So Elliot is learning, and a lot of us get our love confused, and we can talk about this another day when we're not talking straight about hope, is that we've learned that love is conditional. If you do this, then I will love you. And that's not called love. That's actually called prostitution. Mm-hmm. And we have all at some point learned to prostitute ourselves. You understand how I'm using the word. That we've sublimated issues and parts of ourselves because we think we would get more love that way. And as we get to be adults and we get to see, that's not real love. Real love is loving someone exactly as they are, taking them as they are, deserve it or not. Okay.
Rabbi?
Yes?
I love everyone exactly the way they are, unconditional love. It's Nancy speaking here.
Thank you, Nancy.
And yet the example... of the cynic is, and I get to discern who I spend my time with. I think discerning is very different than being judgmental. It's like, this isn't a space I want to be in now. But when you gave the choice of the cynic's room or the comics room, I mean, obviously I want to be in the comics room, but the truth for me,
yeah.
I just turned 67 a couple of days ago, so you're right about becoming an adult. It's going to happen to me one of these days. But the the truth is, when I have a power struggle of some sort, like someone mentioned in politics, I do reach out to read the other side and what they're up to, or the conspiracy theories, or like I would probably go in the cynics room. Just the quote that comes to mind is "Know thy enemy," but enemy doesn't really fit with unconditional love. But I don't know. I just like to be educated.
We can learn a lot from cynics, and we can learn a lot from loving people who we don't necessarily like. It's a great. I absolutely agree with you.
But I don't have to stay in the room with Texas.
But you don't have to stay in the room, and we're gonna.
This is
go ahead.
This is a fascinating book. The woman here was a librarian in a prison, and she discovered that those people are people. They're human beings, and she became attached to them, and she cared about them, and she didn't ask them why they were in prison. She took them for who they were and not for their history. But it's something, you know, once they get a label on them, you can't see them anymore.
Right.
We have to stop labeling people.
Right, right. And thank you, Carol, for bringing that up. I know last week I read some things from my friend James, who's in prison, and I know a bunch of you wrote letters to James, and some people sent him postcards, and some people sent him greeting cards, as he had. And I love that. I haven't heard back from him yet, because the prison system mail system's getting attacked as it is, and getting back and forth letters from him sometimes can take a week, 10 days, or longer. Alex, if you could re-put up, if anyone would like to feel good about themselves, here's a quick thing. Write a note to my friend James, or our friend James, who's in prison. Alex, are you able to throw his contact info back up into the chat for people?
Yes, I will do that right now.
And just send James a postcard if you don't want your return address on there. Some people get freaked out. I don't care. Or write him a letter. And find out. He's really bored right now. He's in lockdown 23 plus hours a day. He's writing me a lot of letters. I can't keep up with it, so diversify. let me come back. Okay, wait. Oh, guys, I have really bad news. Not really bad news, you could tell from the way I said it. But here we're going to do something we've never done before. On Monday, I did a little course on JFST meditation, and I thought, hey, I have a question. I wonder how many of the people who come to the Saturday service do meditation at all. And then I thought, hey, they don't know what's on the schedule anyway, so hey, I've got an idea. What do you say we do a 5-minute meditation? Here's the rules for JFST meditation. JFST stands for Just Effin' Sit There. All I'm going to ask you to do is to spend 5 minutes not on chat and just to see if you can sit for 5 minutes. I'm not going to give a lot more rules because then people are going to start. There's no mantra. There's no, you have to keep your eyes focused on a certain thing. There's no right way or wrong way to do this. We're just going to sit for 5 minutes. Any huge objections before we try it? All right. Let's try 5 minutes. This might be the best part of the service, is what you find out that's going on right there up inside your head. You might learn more than you would from me talking. So let me try our 5-minute meditation starting now. know we did that. Thank you guys for all joining on that. That was kind of sprung on you, and I thank you for all engaging. There's something I found very, very tender and intimate in sharing that with everyone. If you want, 2 o'clock every day, 2 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. I am meditating online just like this. Glad to join me if you need a reminder to take a break to see what's going on up in your head. Okay, we're going to go back to talking about hope. We all ready for that? Okay. Here's what I found out in talking to my friend Larry about hope. Hold on. Share my screen. There we go. He used this phrase about hope, and I'm just going to babble for a little while till I get through all of his points. He said that hope, with its gentle persuasion, whispers its comforting word. And the parts that were key to him in that phrase, it's from a psalm, is that hope with its gentle persuasion whispers its comforting words, is that hope is gentle. Hope doesn't shout at you. Hope is something that's quiet. Hope is not something that's brazen. Larry used this quote. I'm going to say a bit. He said this: I would rather live with hope and sometimes be wrong than live without hope and always be right. I'll say that again. He said, I would rather live with hope and sometimes be wrong than live without hope and always be right. And therein he's going to give us the key. And he kicked my ass at this point on my bike ride. He said, Brian, hope is a choice. You get to choose to have hope or not. He said, I get to choose to have hope because I choose to have hope. And he talked about Paul Tillich, brilliant theologian, said that faith, hope, and love, 3 great qualities that are very overlapping, faith, hope, and love, that they are all decisions and they are choices. And that the word decision, Tillich points out, that the word decision has a lot, is in the idea of an incision, of a cutting. That when you decide to have hope, what you are deciding is to cut out the possibility of not having hope. And that when you decide to have hope, you have made a choice that I am not going to be the person without hope. Now, of course, the same way that fearlessness does not mean you have no fear, having hope does not mean that you have absolutely no despair at all. I can't make that drawing. In that yin-yang notion that there's a little bit of each in the other. That we can have hope, and we decide to have hope. We cut out the possibility, and we live as if it's true. And that the basis of cognitive behavioral therapy is that we follow, that our actions follow decisions. And if we decide to have hope, then we start to live as though we have hope. Or we can do it the other way, and we can start to live as though we have hope, and we live our way into actually having hope. It's the fake it till you make it. My best analogy of it is the way that every night we go to bed. Every night we go to bed, we pretend to be asleep before we fall asleep. That in order to fall asleep at night is you put yourself in your pajamas, you lay yourself on your bed, you put your head on the pillow, and you close your eyes pretending that you're asleep. And similarly with hope, that if you pretend to have hope long enough and you make the decision that I will not go into that room where the cynics are, and I'm going to will myself to have hope, that you'd have hope. And so Larry said this to me while I was on my bike ride here. And it worked. And I found I had a little bit of spark even before I had gotten off my bicycle to check into the Airbnb. And I thought about, hey, I could just turn around right now and I can go back home because I found some spark again. And I thought, nah, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to enjoy my two nights off, which I thoroughly did. But I felt a little bit guilty that I had figured out, I had come to a little bit more hope, a little bit more within me, just by making the decision and just getting yelled at by my best friend. Now, I don't know if that will work perfectly for you, but I have another idea. Uh-oh, hold on. Not that one. Not this one. I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm going to ask you to answer much like we were going to be doing this as a call and response. And give me 1 second. I want to pull the right graphic up. Here it is. I'm going to ask you, are you safe right now? Are you safe right now? And if so, I want you to respond, yes, I'm safe right now. So let me ask you a question. Right now, are you safe right now, Emily?
Yes.
And you say, I'm safe right now.
I'm safe right now.
Right, and I ask someone else, and I say, Nikki, are you safe right now?
Absolutely safe right now.
And Karen Roberts, may I ask you, are you safe right now? You're muted, but I saw every lip move that said, go ahead, say it again.
Okay. So I'm safe here talking with you guys.
That's all I'm asking you.
Okay.
I'm only asking you, are you safe right now? Michael, are you safe right now?
Yes, I am safe right now.
That's it. And then, Betsy Ann, what say you ask me?
Rabbi Brian, are you safe right now?
I'm safe right now.
Excellent.
And I think this is an important thing that we need to do, much like a gratitude practice, where in a gratitude practice, we forget to be grateful, so we have to bring ourselves to be mindful to be grateful. I think we have forgotten that our baseline is, right this moment, I am safe. And so it goes like this, are you safe right now? Yes, I'm safe right now. And then the last line, Betsy Ann, you say again, or ask me.
Rabbi Brian, are you safe right now?
And I say, I'm safe right now. And then you say that last line to me.
Then act that way.
Oh, that lowers the boom, doesn't it, folks? Are you safe right now?
Yes, I'm safe.
That's it. And I'm going to ask us for the next week to try this out. I think this should help if we get a whole stack of, you know what? I am safe right now. Mm-hmm. And we need to remember we're safe, because if we're not safe, there's no way we're ever going to be doing creativity, art, and love. It's much harder if we don't feel safe. Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you need to feel safe. And I would say, even with the extended police presence that I have going on in my city right now, I'm safe right now. And that's all I got.
I'm really grateful for this gift, because I've been feeling a little bit unsafe, because I just found out that my daughter has been exposed to somebody who was exposed to somebody who tested positive. And so I need to remind myself that I'm safe right now.
Yeah, I'm delighted to hear that, Betsy. I'm obviously not delighted to hear your daughter's, but I'm delighted to see that you can feel safe right now. Nonetheless, we're safe right now.
Yes.
Our little friend Elliot, I know, why did I ever say kids shouldn't come to services? They're so useful for examples. Our little friend Elliot is not allowed out in the streets by himself. You know why? Because he feels safe too much. He doesn't know what to be scared of.
Yes.
So there's a balance we're going to have to come to. but to never leave the house because we're afraid that our kid will get hit by a car, then the child never learns because they never leave the house. We're safe and safe. All right, I've talked a bit. Let's see some hands, some feedback. What has this discussion led you to? And also, that was quite an audacious thing that I said to you. I said, hey, basically what I said was, you have a choice right now to have hope or not. And that's a bold promulgation. I don't know if that's even a word, but that's a bold statement. It is a word. Okay, I got a few nods from my literati friends. It's a bold statement for me to make and say, like, buck up, Buttercup. But I don't want to say it like that. Like, say hey ho and get on with it. But I don't want to say it like that. But I do want to say, you had the choice to be here today. You have the choice to be listening right now. Where does your free will end that you can't decide to be more hopeful? Because the outside circumstances are still not under your control. All right, I feel that. I feel really heavy-handed right now. Anyone, give me some feedback here. Yes, Nikki.
I think there are times that you lose sight of that, and having this kind of a conversation, even though I sit and I look at my view and I go, oh my God, like first world problems. I'm so lucky and I'm so grateful. But sometimes, even with what I see, what's in front of me, sometimes I lose sight of it, and yeah. So you need a little. You need a gentle reminder sometimes.
Right. Okay. Maybe we'll do it that way. This is a gentle reminder, much better than the heavy-handed that it feels like I was going for.
It doesn't feel heavy-handed to me at all. I feel like this is exactly what I needed to hear today.
Good.
Me too.
Can you tell us back what it is that you heard? Because it's always better in different voices.
Two pieces, really. One. Even being the yes, I'm safe right now, and so acting that way, because I find a lot of the time I don't feel safe anymore. So it's a nice reminder that I am safe right now, and I can make decisions from that place. But also having that reminder that hope is a choice. It's something that I do sort of naturally. It's something that I've already kind of built into my life a lot, but it's still easy to forget. You know, you get caught up in the day-to-day and you feel overwhelmed. I feel overwhelmed. And I think having it said straight, you know, faith, love, hope, these are decisions. These are things that we choose to have or not have. It may sound heavy-handed in to out, but from where I'm sitting, it's kind of just this. It's useful to hear it in those bold terms.
No, thank you. I'm glad it worked for you. Thank you, Lyndon. Also, if anybody ever watches any of the Religion Outside the Box videos on YouTube, you can thank Lyndon because she's posting and making all that happen. So thank you, Lyndon.
I do a lot of some of the tagging, and I've been posting them to public.
Yeah, the really unsexy work of tagging videos. Thank you, Lyndon. Enrique, what do you have, my friend?
Even though I came in late, what I heard wasn't heavy-handed. It was full of passion, which is a different thing.
Okay.
I'm passionate in myself on, you know, things that I hold dear, and I may sound heavy-handed to some people, to some I may sound passionate. But anyways, to me, it's like, yeah, we have choices. And sometimes choices are gambles. Sometimes, you know, it could go 50% good, 50% bad. But at least we can make choices, even though we may have to stay at home. And like right now, I went out and I had to wear a face shield and use a mask and whatever. But I had that choice. I mean, I could not use it and be exposed.
So let me...
I always have the choice to protect myself and not only
protect your
COVID,
heart. I think that's the hope part, is to protect your hope, to protect your heart, to protect your future orientation. I'm going to say Larry's quote again. I would rather live with hope and sometimes be wrong than to live without hope.
Right.
And always be right.
Because it's my choice. And if I made a mistake, it's mine. Not anybody else's. And nobody else coerced me to do anything. Right. It was my choice. And that's my protection. I can be me.
Wonderful, wonderful. Rags, do you have something to say? Your hand was going up towards the, like you were raising your hand, but maybe you were just fixing your hair. You're fixing your hair. Okay, that's fantastic. Michael.
It was tickling my taste.
Michael, yeah, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Just in light of the question of feeling safe and responding positively, and two things struck me as so powerful about John Lewis's last, what he wrote in the New York Times.
Yeah.
So powerful, this one sentence. That he was talking about, before he heard about King, et cetera, et cetera. He was talking so much about the overwhelm, the fear that he had was the jail. He was in this tremendous fear was the jail, and the bars of the jail, he said, was the looming violence and danger. And this was the world that he was living in, I think, as he was evolving into becoming awakened and a deeply spiritual person. And ultimately, his spirituality deepened when he actually was beaten, like Trayvon Martin and all the people who were beaten so poor badly, and ended up in jail.
Yeah.
And there evolved this extraordinary human being.
So, thank you, Michael. His memory, his legacy, and the non-violent protest, peaceful demonstration. I'll give you one other reason to keep hope alive. Is the people who are the cynics, the people who are the authoritarians, the people who don't know how to laugh. If you really want to piss them off, have some joy. Have hope. They don't understand it. They don't. They hate you for it, and they hate themselves because they don't have joy and laughter. And I think if there's any way we're going to overcome, it's through art. And we're not going to win by fighting violence with violence. We can't. Darkness can't dispel darkness. Only light can do that. Hatred cannot dispel hatred. Only love can do that. Those are the words of Martin Luther King Jr.
Yep.
We have to find hope because that's the only way we're going to win. And it might not happen. And we got to get ready for this. It might not happen in my lifetime. But that doesn't mean I don't have hope that it will happen. This is the narrative of African Americans in slavery for hundreds of years. This is a narrative of Judaism and the Exodus story, is that we keep our eyes towards a far future when this will be fixed. And we would hope rather it should be speedily and in our day. But if it's not, we'll wait for it.
Live towards it.
Yeah. The arc of justice, it bends that way. We live towards it, and it will happen. Good. Allie, what you got, my friend?
So I'm thinking about, we're living through uncertain times, and I think one thing I'm struggling with is where I work, we're right now going through massive layoffs, and even if I'm safe, it almost feels a little bit cruel to be hopeful when I know so many other people that are being horribly affected right now.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. Because if people are suffering, you don't want to be Pollyanna in the room going, oh no, it's all going to work out just fine. Like that's a cruel thing to do. So please, people, help me split this one down. How do we remain hopeful? How do we remain hopeful in our hearts and live joyfully in the suffering of the world? How do we do this?
We don't lessen the suffering by adding to it with our suffering. We need to be at peace with ourselves, and then we can really be present for someone else's suffering. Don't add to the suffering by feeling the same thing. They've got the pain, you've got the presence.
To be attentive to them. God bless you, Carol. Thank you. Carol Williams, you have something that you're saying?
Alex posted a really good answer as well in the chat box.
Oh, good. Would you read that out, Joe? Would you read that out? Would someone read that out?
I'll read it. Back in 1997, I had a very personal financial implosion. I ended up losing my home, my business, and I was homeless and lived in a camper for almost 4 years. And what I learned then is whatever happens, it's not forever. Mm. And so the way I dealt with that situation is I just kept putting one foot in front of the other, and eventually it got better. And so what I learned in 1997, I'm applying to this right now. As horrible as all this stuff is that's going on, I realize it's not forever, and I just have to use those same things that I learned back in 97, keep putting one foot in front of the other, know that eventually there will be a tomorrow that is better. Mm. And in the meantime, just focus on the things that I can do and I can fix, even if it means just putting a tent up in the backyard and pretending that I'm camping back there instead of being out and hanging out.
It is quite a mess. It's quite a mess. I think of it as the time that Jane and I came home and the kids had, they were little and they took all of the toys. And they took all Monopoly and Clue and everything. They were too little to play them, but we had these games around. And they dumped all of the pieces to every game in one pile in the middle of the room. Like all the cards, all the money, all the everything. And I could see it really clearly there was, this is just going to take time to sort out. It's just going to take time to sort out. It's not going to be a fun job.
And in the meantime, stick with the winners, like groups like these ones, where you can recharge your batteries and all that, and be good to people and do the best that you can, you know, with people.
Amen.
And the ones that have hurt you and all that, hey, I've taken more or less a Buddhist a philosophy about it. You know, if that makes them feel good, fine. I'll just give them my best. Smile and let them burn.
That's what you got. Tony Ann, what do you have?
Ali, your question makes me think about the ways that joy and hope get really kind of fluffified in pop culture.
Nice.
And that hope is a lot of times, at least in my mind, the images that come up for it are like peace and, you know, everything is perfect, except that when we have conversations about hope, they're always when the clouds are thickest over our heads.
Mm.
And so there's a gap between visuals that we have of what hope looks like and where hope is built and where it's cultivated. And it's always cultivated in the mud. And so I guess just with that, with your question, the part about like knowing that people are suffering and having hope feels away, that resonates with me, and it makes me want to check that part of myself that thinks that hope has to look a certain way. But it doesn't have to look pretty, because it's usually not, you know. And even though really horrible things are happening, I still have a heart that's facing towards what could be.
Amen.
Knowing that community can come together for the people who are losing their jobs, and people can feed each other right now because of delivery services, and you know, people are using Venmo to help folks pay their rent. And so folks are showing up, and this is where hope is built, even though it's a really ugly situation. So maybe play with some images of what hope looks like versus what we're told hope looks like.
Yeah. I go back to what Larry said about hope having gentle whispers, that it's not a loud thing. It's subtle. So folks, a few housekeeping things. Thank you all for showing up. I appreciate that. Thank you everyone who makes donations to Religion Outside the Box to help this kind of thing happen. What else do I want to say? Tuesday, we have office hours if you want to come to that every day, 2 p.m. meditation, newsletter. Y'all know about the newsletter already, or you wouldn't be here. It's going to focus. It's going to be related to this topic because my brain only was on. That's all I'm thinking about these days. And I want to end with a few questions. So let me do a little review of what we did today. Well, we mainly talked about hope. We talked about not going into that cynical room, but trying to choose hope nonetheless. And I want to ask you guys all questions to end with. And it's a pretty easy question. It goes like this. Are you safe right now?
Yes.
Yes.
Are you safe right now?
Yes, I'm safe right now.
I know this doesn't work very well on Zoom, but I have a question, which is, are you safe right now?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I'm safe right now.
Okay, I've got one different question.
It's
a little different question. My different question. It goes like this. It goes, hey, are you safe right now?
Yes.
I'm safe right now.
Oh, sorry. The audio cut out there for a second, and I didn't hear you. And my question was, are you safe right now?
Yes.
Safe right now.
I'm glad you've chosen to act that way. I thank you all for participating. I'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody. Take care.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.